Over the past two seasons, we've had the privilege of sitting down with the most inspiring entrepreneurs. Each of them shared lessons that can really empower you to transform the way you think about business and life. Today, we're bringing you a special recap, which is packed with game-changing advice from these trailblazers. These insights will fuel your journey to success. I'm Ancila Nombewe, and this is Access Genie, the podcast that opens doors to success in the world of entrepreneurship.
The greatness can be transferred. When I met this man, beyond explanation, you could feel the vibration. You can start sweating when you meet him, not because you're scared of him. And he doesn't lead by fear. He leads by connection. Great leaders, I believe, either they master this or whatever, they are born, you know? They have it in them because they don't have to fight with you to prove they are. And bosses and managers, they have to show you, I am. And that's why, like, when you meet a boss, you know already the energy is different. He's different from the management that I had, but I had good managers. And when you meet him, you feel like open. You feel like you can talk your story. And that allows him to tell you what he needs to tell you. Great lessons. It's around, and it's about retail, administration. Get your bookkeeping right. Get your expenses and be prepared. Look for funds and raise funding. That's administration. That's, he said, in business, there's four legs of the table. And on top is the customer. But in this table, one leg is administration. So I was explaining that one leg. And the second leg is merchandising. If you are going to be in an aisle, in a shop, you've seen when you get into a shop, there's so many brands. When you are there, be ready to compete on price. There's price wars and all of that. Be ready for what merchandising is and look appealing for the customer. And the leg three was about promotions. Promotions and social responsibility. You have to promote yourself in a way that is different, makes you first. And also, as you build, be socially responsible and give people. You can see the part that Pick and Pay plays. Doing good is good business. That's his tagline. And that's what makes him stand out. The other leg, it's about people. You talked about Capitec and how they're focused on people. That's why they're growing. If you put people first within the organization, they build the scalability of this thing. Obviously, what makes Pick and Pay is the people inside. So you have to take care of your people that you live with in the office, that you do business with. Make them feel important. Make them feel heard and let their ideas be, you know?
I really love that you're touching on sales like that. But a lot of young entrepreneurs would say, I've started a business and it's difficult to make sales. So because I see Access Genie is really a masterclass for entrepreneurs to learn about how they can grow their businesses, I'm going to throw in a case study
to you
so that we can solve it together. So after this, you need to be able to sell whatever product or service that you have in your business. So let's take, for example,
this answer is worth millions.
Worth millions, because he charges for this.
This specific answer I'm going to give you now is worth millions, and I'm hoping someone is going to take it and make something out of it.
Yeah, for sure. So let's use this case study. A young chef has really come from chef school, and they want to open their own restaurant.
Yeah.
They found good location. They've built a good website. They've got great food. And everything is in place for them to start getting customers in the door.
Yeah.
But they're struggling to get customers outside friends and family. And even with that, they're finding that friends and family don't always support.
Yeah.
He's even struggling to get friends and family into the business. What steps should they take first to start getting their first, say, 100 customers?
Okay, so to be a salesperson, you must be a marketing genius, right? And I remember sitting with my coach the other day. He said to me, we're now at a time where, number one, it's so easy to actually make money. We're living in a time where it's so easy to make money. Yeah. Do you know what makes it easy? internet and social media, to be specific, I've got a feeling that the majority of people out there don't use social media to their benefit. They don't fully leverage on social media. How did you find me?
Social media.
Social media. Mm. And what did you do?
Reached out.
You reached out?
Yeah.
You found me on Insta, right? Mm. Look at that. You didn't know me. I didn't know you. We didn't have to meet in person. But you, what did you see on my Insta? You saw my sales videos, isn't it? You saw something I was doing around sales. And you reached out. So that's what I personally believe people need to do. They need to be able to put their brands out there. They must be able to communicate the messages out there, right? They must be able to get to a point where they're comfortable and confident to really, you know, give customers a reason why they should try them out. That's the first thing. Marketing is essential. And don't be shy. I used to think marketing is expensive.
So how do they do this? In this instant, they've got a restaurant and they want to get their initial 100 clients step by step to get those 100 clients. Are they creating content? How are they becoming this marketing genius?
Okay, perfect. So the first thing I would do in that situation, I would host a group of people at a minimal fee, right? I'd host a couple of people. I'd give them what I call the experience. You want to first give people the experience. You want to give people a taste of what to expect. So I'll invite, you know, the type of people I want to do business with, the type of clients I would like to have at my restaurant. If I'm aiming for executives, whatever, I would say, guys, on this day I'm hosting an event where I'll give it an experience to my restaurant. This is what we're serving. The fee is going to be this, right? Can you please come through? And once they're there, I'd film that entire experience, right? And once that's done, I would actually get to a point where I get the people to share the experience of what they thought about the food. And once that's done, I would create a communication platform where now I engage these people, but I would also create a situation where I now start using my customers as my advocates. The best marketing tool for your business is your customers. And something happens with customers is that most people will give you a chance the first time just to experience you. And this is the mistake salespeople make. Salespeople think, my relationship with the customer ends when they buy. But that's when it starts. Before you buy, we haven't started anything. We're still engaging, right? Okay, we still did something, but it's not really solid. But once you buy from me for the first time, now I have to protect that. Now I have to lock you in, right? And the best way to lock you in is to ensure that I become obsessed about serving you, about making you happy. Because once I get you excited and happy, then you come back. And once you come back, you start to trust me and like me. And once you trust me and like me, you start referring me to your network. There's this place, wherever, best experience, go try it out. So, you've got these people that you're inviting for this experience. They're liking your food. At the end, they're sharing what they thought about the food. What we want to do now is to start leveraging on those relationships with these guys. Create some sort of an engagement platform where you now... You know, I'll give an example. In our business, we just finished our SalesMatter app now, where it's going to have a CRM component, not to annoy people, but to keep our customers engaged about what we're going to do next. You know, keep them, you know, posted on our next events, all these type of things. So I personally believe that it should be something that is so intimate that you communicate with your clients. Right, when you have something exciting, you communicate with them. But let me add another important part to what must then happen from this point. Create loyalty programs and reward systems for your customers. Why do most of us go back to a Starbucks? Why do we do that? It's because I know that I'm likely going to get my 10th coffee for free. Right. So create some sort of a loyalty program for your clients. We've seen this situation where restaurants are, it doesn't have to be like a Wacky Wednesday type of situation. It doesn't have to be a Wacky Wednesday situation, but you want to have those nights, those intimate nights with your customers. You want to give them the best experience. For example, I like going to the Daruma restaurant by Oskido in Waterfall. They've got this thing of, I think it's couples nights every Wednesday, right? And it's so intimate. It's and that's why I keep going back. So you also want to create those intimate moments with your clients. So get your marketing right. Get them feeling good about, you know, the experience around them. Create a platform to communicate with them. Keep them engaged. Use them to drive marketing for your business. And they can only do so if you start maintaining that relationship with them.
43% to 48% of entrepreneurs' marriages end in divorce. That's very high.
That is high.
End in divorce.
Sure.
Again, because of the pressures and struggles that come with entrepreneurship and the time that is required. My friend always says to me, Ancela, I want you to be a businesswoman and not an entrepreneur, because she sees them as like really two different spaces where business people are really just concerned about profit. And entrepreneurship, in my perspective, has a little bit of social a social link to it, especially in the context of Africa, because you can't really do anything without taking care of the society, because Ubuntu, right, over just business. How do we help entrepreneurs not become part of the statistic of 43 to 48% of divorces in the country?
Entrepreneurs love their business. They personalized it. It's not numbers, like you say. It's not numbers. This is something that, you know, an entrepreneur takes nothing and turns it into something. And as a result, that becomes their bay. That becomes their, we really do give it a personality. And we give it a, human qualities. And that's where the problem is. Because if I have a baby, if I have a child, I expect my wife to love my child as much as I do, which is kind of natural, it's normal. And I take it as an affront if she doesn't. So you're right. At some point, you've got to turn into a businessman. And that means literally being intentional about letting go. Let go, bring in capable people who can gradually take over. And it's a bit of a blow to the ego. It's a bit of a blow to the, to be letting go of this baby of yours. Mm. Because you have a vision from day one as an entrepreneur. You know exactly where you want to go. You know exactly what you want to see happening. So to let go of that means letting somebody else start steering it towards a certain direction. So yes, being intentional. Being intentional about it is crucial. You have to just know it from the get-go, think it from the get-go, to say at some point I'm going to have to let go. Interestingly, it's the same thing that you do with your child. That, you know, at some point they have to grow their wings and they'll be bigger than me. They'll have a life outside of me. And I've got to learn to let go. And I've got to prepare to let go now for the future.
What kind of things should entrepreneurs be thinking about in their own businesses to be able to make such data-driven decisions, to be able to one day make the $114, $215 billion type of revenue?
I think the first thing they need to think about is their data collection strategy. We live in a world that is inundated with a lot of information, a lot of data, but most organizations, especially small businesses, don't know what to do with that data. So yes, you're sitting with all this data, and then what, right? So you need to be clear, I think more importantly, is what's the strategy that you actually have as a business and what you're actually trying to achieve. So that will then speak to how you collect the data, what you're going to be using that data for. So as an example, we'll talk to the small businesses, right? So you've got CRM, which stands for Customer Relationship Management Systems, such as Salesforce. If you're actually collecting data and have a CRM system, that will actually allow you to have one holistic place or central repository where your data sits about your customers. So it's one view of your customer, as an example. You spoke about Google, Facebook, etc. They use web analytics, right? And that's something even small businesses can do, where you're actually tracking the customers that are actually going to your website. What are they clicking? What are they actually purchasing? What do they like, don't like, right? That will actually help you to make the necessary decisions about how to actually even improve your website, as an example. You've got online forms and surveys that you could actually create, where you then can get first-hand feedback, opinions, preferences from your customers in your business to actually help you drive the business better and even the profits. As an example, if somebody's on your website busy purchasing the same products on a month-to-month basis, then that should actually help you be proactive about sending an email to actually advertise that we know you're going to be buying this product again next month. How about we give you a discount for purchasing 3 months in advance, as an example, right? Then if you have a business that actually has a point of sale, so a point of sale system or machine, that will actually help you track the transaction history, the customer behavior, the products and inventory. So there's a lot of ways that small businesses should be using their data at hand to actually help drive their businesses. Mm-hmm. Another component you could actually use data for as a small business is not just about from a customer perspective. It's about also operations and productivity. Your data will help you identify where you've got bottlenecks, right? Where you've got pain points, where you've got inefficiencies. So you can actually help then drive those inefficiencies and rectify them, actually re-engineer and engineer new processes that will actually help productivity. So there's lots that small businesses can do. And all of these things don't need to break the bank, honestly, right? You don't need to be a data expert to work with data. For me, honestly, if you've got Excel, a spreadsheet, that's all you need. Mm. And it can actually help you data mine using Excel.
So even in the entrepreneurship space, there are over 85% of businesses that open every year that close. Mm. And over 90% of those close within the first 5 years. And when we look 10 years and beyond and actually look at businesses that are able to scale and make a difference, it's less than 1% of any business that's opened at any particular year. But it doesn't mean that all of those entrepreneurs have not worked hard. What do you think makes the difference and makes some people successful and others not?
Sure. I think it's a variety of things. When I do my entrepreneurial workshops and business development workshops, one of the things that I start with is the self, right? Mm-hmm. And I know the entrepreneurs are always bored. They're like, what does this have to do with my business? Mm-hmm. But your business will only be as good as you are as an individual. So a lot of times in my workshop, I start with the self, you know, the limiting stories, because people will start a business and they have these limiting stories about self and the business. Mm-hmm. So for example, like success is just not for me. I'm cursed, you know, happiness is not for me. Abundance is not for me. Those are limiting thoughts, right? They could also have thoughts like you have to work hard to make money. That could be a limiting thought as well, because not everybody that works hard makes money. So if it's you have a belief and it's not serving you in your business, that might hinder the way that you show up. Mm-hmm. I know for me personally, when I still had, because I used to also do marketing consulting and business development, that was my first business right after varsity. And what I did is, I remember at some point in my journey, I was not having money in my bank account, right? And that's very frustrating as an entrepreneur. And I sat with myself and I really thought about, you know, why do I feel this way? What am I doing wrong? All those things. And one of the things was I realized I had a limiting belief. Number one, it's the way I was doing my business, right? Mm-hmm. The way my business model was designed. The beliefs I had about myself as a business owner, right? Because whatever you believe about yourself will show up in your business as well. So I believed that I wasn't good enough. So I was underquoting. I was, you know, not setting proper boundaries in my business environment. Because if you don't think you're good enough, you always overcompensate. Mm-hmm. And this is where entrepreneurs find themselves very depleted. You're doing a lot of work. Number one, you're underquoting, and so you're not getting enough money. And at the end of the month, you're frustrated. So I had to unpack all of that. So I said, okay, what do I actually want? What do I believe about myself that's not working? What's not working in my business? And that's why I decided that I'm going to change how I'm going to do things. I don't want to work, you know, 12, 24 hours, you know, the whole hustle culture. I want to have time to rest. I want to be fulfilled in my job. And who told me that I have to work, you know, because I remember sitting, I'm like, why have I created a 9-to-5 for myself? In my own business, something that's even more frustrating. Is there any other way I can approach my business? And yes, you have, this doesn't mean that you don't have to put in the work, right? But you have to design a business that speaks into who you are, your values, your purpose, and the type of life you want to see for yourself. So that's where, for me, things really transformed. And that's where doors started to open. And I was like, okay, if I believe I'm not good enough, I am good enough. How do I show up in my business, right? How do I, now I, then we stop underquoting, right? Then we chase up invoices. Then we, one of the principles that I do in my business is that I always need a deposit before I do any work. I don't start on your marketing plan. I don't start on your, even my coaching, right? I don't do any coaching unless there's money in my account, right? Because I had to go through those seasons of chasing, and which are also seasons of lessons. I don't want people to watch this or listen to this and think and be hard on themselves. Those seasons of hardship are seasons of lessons, and we take them in, but we have to ask ourselves the hard questions, right? Is this working? If it's not, why continue doing something that's not serving you? So that's when you start to unpack and ask yourself those questions. So I would say to any entrepreneur who's on this journey, and they feel like they're not getting the fruits of their results, sit and ask yourself the hard questions. Why did you start your business, right? There are other things that are more on the business side. When you start a business, you have to know what you want out of it. Do you want money out of it? Do you want to sell it, right? Do you want, they call it harvesting or selling, just as the business is doing well, right? Are you selling this so that you can, are you building this business so you can sell it to someone else? Are you building this business so it's for your legacy? What is your biggest reason for starting your business? And then, you know, start with the what, and then why does it matter to you to have this business, right? And make sure that your business is aligned with your values. Too many entrepreneurs are doing businesses that are not in alignment with who they are, and that can be very depleting. It's easier to do the work when your business resonates with you, when it's in alignment, when you're not drifting from your values, right? So this doesn't mean that you have to be broke, because people think that when you're living your purpose, you must be broke. I also had to break away from that, you know, and decide that I have to help myself first before I can extend that to others. So really ask yourself the hard questions, but start with your belief system. Start with why you started the business. What is your end goal with the business, right? And then create a business model. And this is where strategy structure comes in. Create a business model that works. A lot of other entrepreneurs are also struggling because they don't ask for help, right? Entrepreneurs are people that like to do things for themselves. I know, because I'm one. I like to do things for myself. And, you know, but sometimes if you don't know, that means you might need to learn from others.
Yeah.
And then you sit in this box suffering, but there's an Yvette somewhere, there's an Ancilla somewhere, you know, who's been in this business longer than you are. And just ask them, hey, when you're struggling with payments, how do you go about it? Your business model, what does that look like? There are things that I'm struggling to shift and change. Go work at another person's organization who has certain parts figured out. Volunteer, shadow them, ask them questions, or just observe and learn, or listen to them and see how do they solve their problems. And then that also helps you solve problems in your business.
But just having that internet connection, even if it's 20 megabytes a day, there's so much power that you can have there. There's billion-dollar companies that are run off of cell phone devices. And now with the quality of our applications, the quality of platforms like ChatGPT, you don't need a laptop. Right. It was just announced last week that the new iPhone is 60% more expensive than a MacBook Pro. Right. It's crazy that if a cell phone is more expensive than a laptop, but it's because of the capabilities. Right. And the use that you can have there. So I think for me, that speaks to where we are with tech, is that the access that young kids can have, no matter where they are, is incredible. Access to information, the coding that can be done, the businesses that can be built, just with a couple of megabytes of data, I think is exponential.
Mm. Yeah. What are some of the most exciting tech trends that you've seen come up so far?
Sure. I think that sometimes with tech, there's nothing new under the sun that happens. But I think what technology is doing is making things easier, better, different, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what it's supposed to be, making constant improvements. I'm super excited about the things that are happening in the energy space, in the renewable energy space. There's so many people just beyond like solar, but, you know, crafting kinetic energy. There's a young lady that a couple years ago, she built a soccer ball, right? And then kids could kick it around all day and then go plug it in. At home at the end of the night, and all that energy would like light a lamp. She's using that same technology to build road infrastructure, speed bumps. You drive over that speed bump, it powers half the city. And so that kind of technology is super exciting. Robotics. There's so many African entrepreneurs that are creating prosthetic limbs, robots connected to the human brain, like that Wakanda level technology is actually existing. So robotics, energy, and we'll see how things go in kind of the AI space. That's still early days for us on the continent, but I'm glad that we're starting to have a voice in that space and not just other parts of the world.
You know, I'm a big fan of Shark Tank. I watch every episode every week, and I see so many different types of entrepreneurs pitching there. But when some pitch, I see the fear and the shaking and, you know, words can't come out and they're so scared. And I can imagine how stressful it is if you're in that kind of investment space and you have to go and pitch in front of people that you're scared of. What parts do you think entrepreneurs should be concentrating on that sort of pitching platform like that? I think we have a few in South Africa that do that as well. What should they focus on that can help them, you know, calm the nerves down a little bit?
I mean, you're doing it because you're passionate about something, and that'll always go back to that more than anything else, right? I think there's always something to be said about knowing your numbers, knowing your market, etc. But more than anything else, people want a founder who's passionate about the problem they're trying to solve.
Yeah.
There's really no other substitute for that.
Yeah.
We're going on a journey together if I'm going to invest into you, and I need to sort of believe that this is something you completely care about. You're not doing it just to make money, to be honest. Great to make money. You know, we all need money. We love making money. But if you're really passionate about the problem you're trying to solve, it goes a long way. And I think you can always see, like, you're nervous, obviously, and people forgive nerves. We're all nervous. I walk into meetings now and I'm still nervous, right? But as soon as I start speaking about something I care about, you can see I get excited. I'm like, oh, okay, well, that's how I'd like to do it. And I think you'd be so surprised. It comes across. You might falter here and there, but it does really come across.
It comes across.
Use case for my product, my service, etc. I see AI being able to do both, right? So in the future, I suspect we're going to find a lot of use cases, and we see it already today, in terms of productivity, in terms of management of processes, in terms of doing the stuff that a machine can do that's better than a human being, which drives up optimization, which then results in greater profitability. So that's the one side, and we've got that already, right? So that's going to become more so. I reckon that small businesses are going to downsize with things like elasticity, so things on the cloud, you can outsource things there, we can have elastic workforces, we can start saying, well, how do we move very quickly with digitization, access to marketplaces. So AI is going to change the market dynamics significantly from both the internal and the external. The other side is also true, right? I foresee that AI, if used correctly, is going to be able to help create markets that you weren't able to see as quickly, because it can start to identify these signals that we spoke about, right? And if correctly used, and again, it's not about AI, machine learning, et cetera, replacing the human being. It's about augmenting decisions and data sets so we can make decisions faster. There's a misnomer that AI is going to do everything. Well, it can only do things to a certain degree, i.e. what have you programmed to do? What's the incentive, right? So what's the gain function for that thing? Basically, the long and short of it is AI accelerates what we're doing right now to a different degree. It's not necessarily about changing and making things disruptive. It's not necessarily a step change per se. It is in terms of speed, but it's more about optimizing and getting things a lot better in terms of what we're doing right now.
Yeah, certainly. With the signals that you spoke about in mind, where do you think African entrepreneurs should be looking at in terms of new businesses and what they should be starting ventures around?
Yeah, so there's a misnomer, that we in Africa have to take what the quote-unquote Western world, European world has done, and we've got to replicate. The conditions are completely different. Right? Yeah. So how do we find nuances within our ecosystems? I can't tell you. I haven't traveled that extensively on Africa, but I will give you a few thoughts, right? Yeah. So one is really think about the masses. Think about access. Mm. Think about access to services, to products, to things, right? Think about those things. Think about a growing user base. Yeah. We hear about the youth dividend. Is it a curse? Is it an opportunity? What are the opportunities over there? Think about traditional knowledge. There's a huge things around traditional knowledge, right? How do we think about those things? Think about also, more importantly, is what is it that makes us African? And there's a huge piece over here, right? The whole concept, at least of the US, is about me. It's about individualism, not collectivism. Mm-hmm. The concept around Africa is around not tribes, but around the culture of closeness. It's about togetherness. It's about doing things together. My view is there's a space over here around all those things that I spoke about. But again, it's the value that we have. In South Africa, everyone knows the concept of Ubuntu, mm-hmm. right? And it's that thing. How do we, not about the process or not about the business and services, but it's about capturing that essence of togetherness. It's about community. Again, look at where we are in 2024, where there's a breakdown of those things because we haven't got that community element. Mm. So the opportunity space for entrepreneurs is about understanding the nuance, but it's also about how do you do business. That's the key piece. It's about community. It's about growing things together. Mm. I just came back from the Nordics right now. I was in Oslo at a conference, and this is the big thing that's coming through. It's about saying, We've moved so far away from people. It's all about profitability and money. We have to come back to communities.
What was the winning formula of finding the right people in your team? I've seen your team, even when you're out in Cape Town and they're here, runs like a well-oiled machine. There was no difference in how the experience we received here today because you're here compared to when you're not here. Yeah. Absolutely the same. How have you been able to find those kinds of people to run different campuses across the country and have it all seamless and look the way it does?
It's a challenge. I'm going to say it's an everyday challenge. And behind the scenes, there's a lot going on. And we deal with a lot of things and constantly. You know, it's that that saying of you look at a dam and you've got the duck or the on the top and they go so graciously, or the swan going so graciously, but the bottom, the legs are going like this. It's literally like that. People don't realize behind the scenes all these small things that we see and we pick up that we have to work and change and constantly have to have meetings and change this and see how we change this process or this policy. So there's a lot of that going on behind the scene. To find the right people, it comes with time. It is people that you build a relationship. Trust. Trust is everything for me. Mm-hmm. I must be able to trust you. You must be able to trust me. You must trust me that I will make sure that your salary is paid every month and you have a positive working environment. You must trust me, but I need to trust you that you will represent me. That's my biggest thing. As soon as I can't trust somebody, that's when it usually doesn't work out. Yeah. So I think it is that mutual trust. I trust you can trust me and I'll trust you. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. It's taken time to find the right people. And they also actually came naturally into those positions. They started started in different positions. Mm-hmm. And they just showed a natural interest. We are here, or I'm here. I see there we need a gap. We've got a gap here. I'm going to start filling that gap. Mm-hmm. And I'm because we want to make things better. And that's when you start noticing that person say, oh, sure, you're actually doing very well in that position. And we actually need to. And that's how my team that I have actually got to where they are today. Mm-hmm. All of them actually started in different positions and moved into that because they showed the interest and they showed the willingness and they're working together. But it is difficult to find people, especially the younger generation today. Yeah. They've got to work smart and not work harder. In my era, we're still working hard, work hard, and that's the whole thing. You have to work hard.
Yeah.
There is no way of getting past that. Yes, there are certain things that help you that can make life a little bit easier. I get it. But at the end of the day, they still work hard. You're not going to get past that. I think it's a battle.
Yeah.
It's a battle, but It's a battle that you have to fight every day.
I truly understand that most likely you don't have a big team to allow you to work on your business because you just can't afford it, or maybe you don't have the right clientele at the present time. So let me just help you make the shift in the space that you are at now. Here is a weekly schedule that ensures that you can work both in your business and on your business, but with a big goal of being able to work on your business, because working on your business is what brings that growth. It's what brought me that 2,000% growth in revenue. So a week, for example, if you're trying to make this transition, it will look a little bit like this. Say Mondays to Wednesday, you're working in the business, right? So for example, in the mornings, you tackle urgent emails, you look at your operational tasks, as well as do all your team check-ins, for example. And then in the afternoon, you shift your focus to current projects, to client meetings, and any sort of immediate business needs that need to happen. And then in the evenings, you spend your time really reflecting on the day's achievement and identifying, you know, what sort of key areas of improvement need to happen and be able to plan for the next day. Reflecting is really important, because if you can't take a step back to reflect, you can't learn, you can't grow. So that will be your Monday to Wednesday. And then from Thursday can be sort of your transition day, right? In the mornings, you can analyze the week's performance, for example, look at the key areas that need to happen in your business, look at your customer feedback, for example. And then on the afternoons or Thursdays, you can begin crafting your strategic plan for any upcoming week and be able to delegate tasks that can be handled by your team without your direct involvement. And by doing so, you're training your team to be able to start doing work without you being on their case on a day-to-day basis. And then Friday becomes your big day. This is when you then start working on the business, right? So a Friday could look a little something like this. In the morning, you can get right into strategic planning, define your long-term goals, assess the market trends that are happening within your industry, and really put down actionable steps that can help grow your business, what your revenue targets are, making sure that you do any sort of research that needs to happen in that space. And then in the afternoon, you can explore new opportunities, you can explore partnerships or even markets and really take time to think about the big picture. And then in the evening, you then start to reflect as well on the week and celebrate any wins that you'd have had and identify new areas of improvement. And by doing so, you'll make sure that you're able to schedule and emphasize the important things that need to happen within your teams. And then it will help you have time that's dedicated to working on your business and not just squeezing in working on your business when you can or if you can. And this mindset shift really is crucial for sustainable growth. And as you grow, you can then dedicate maybe 2 days or 3 days to working on your business until you get to a point that I'm at now, where I'm able to work on my business on a day-to-day basis.